Hey everyone, welcome back to the Swears and Does Hair podcast. Today I have an awesome new guest to interview for you. Her name is Carlana. She is a hairstylist for the bridal industry and she is now an author as well. She wrote a book this past year called Hairpins in Happiness, and I brought her on the podcast to talk about her journey with writing the book and the journey of growing and building her business. So thank you so much for joining me today. Can you take a few seconds to introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. My name is Carlana De La Cruz. I have been a hairstylist for the last 20 years plus, and I pretty much jumped into doing bridal work from the very beginning. It's something that I've always, quite frankly, been really good at, and it came naturally to me, and I could kind of, you know, build from the out or the inside out and look at those inspiration photos and make it happen. And kind of took a few years, of course, to build my portfolio, so to speak. But yeah, it's just something I've always really loved and was really passionate about from the very beginning. I've had people over the years ask, how many weddings do you think you've done in your career? I have no idea. At first, I was at a commission salon, so it's just as weddings came, I did them. So I might do one or two a year, and I might do, you know, now I cap off at 20. I won't do more than 20. Mm-hmm. I prefer to do more like 15, but, you know, I can be persuaded to do more.
I feel like the longer that you're in this industry, the more you're like, so maybe it's not about more. Maybe it's just about better and charging more and higher quality rather than just being like, I want to do as many weddings as I can get in.
And I love doing them. And I hate when I have to say, I'm so sorry, that date's already taken. But I mean, it does happen. And the putting a cap on 20 isn't so much about like, I'm over it. I don't want to do any more weddings. It's more, I do have kids and
I
need to do outside, other things.
Outside influences are kind of like, well, I have other things that are kind of a little bit more priority at this time kind of thing. And I know for myself, the kids was really the big one.
Yes. I have teenage girls now and homecoming in the fall is something that it was like, I can't be doing your hair for your wedding instead of my child's hair for her formal dance at school and stuff. Like that's a big deal. So unfortunately, date taken.
I always had to block off certain dates and I always used to get really frustrated because my sons, they both did dance and their dance school wouldn't announce like dates for things until last minute. God. And I'm like, I cannot plan my life last minute. I don't have a 9-to-5 job. This doesn't work for me. Like
I need
6 months leave time. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, I need at least 6 months. And sometimes, like even right now, I've actually, this is so current for me because I keep getting early fall requests for weddings and I don't know when homecoming is yet. I'm like, I can't commit.
Yep.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So I have a couple on the hook right now because it could be the second to last week in September and it could be the last week. But until I know that, anyway.
Yep. Same thing.
It's with mom life slash like, stylist life.
we do certain things on the weekends in the fall. And so, you know, my best friend, she also does hair and makeup and I don't book my own weddings anymore. I'll just assist for her when she needs me. And she'll ask me about a date in the fall. And I'm like, you know better. Like I can't, I can come on last minute for certain things. Like if somebody's like, they suddenly want to add the whole bridal party for hair and she was only booked for makeup. And she's like, hey, you know, can you come and do one or the other? Because I'm a dual artist and I can do both, you know, those kinds of things. I'm like, okay, I'll come in for that. But like blocking off 12 months in advance or 9 months in advance, I'm like, I can't do that right now. I need to keep my fall weekends open for my kids and the things that we do. So,
and it's such a short period of life that that's even going to be an issue. I mean, in the next 4 years, that'll be over for me. And then I can take all the fall weddings I want, but.
Exactly. My youngest is a freshman right now. And I'm just like, okay, we got 4 more years.
My youngest
left.
Is an eighth. Yep.
Yeah. And then I'm like, and then they're off to college. And
exactly.
There we go.
Yep.
Awesome. So Tell me about your journey and your career as an artist, as it relates to the book. At what point in your career were you like, I want to put this down on paper? Was this something that you've been thinking about for a really long time? Or was this kind of something that happened, you know, more in like 2022 or 2023?
So I would say I definitely got a kick in the pants from some of you guys online where you're like, do the thing, make it happen, like no more excuses, that kind of stuff, which is completely my mantra. But also I'm a president of the Procrastination Club. So I had been writing on and off for well over a decade. Unfortunately, it's so embarrassing, but true. And it kind of kept morphing. So at first it was kind of like, stories from behind the chair, because I do cut and color during the week.
Yeah, yeah.
For my regular clients, as well as bridal. Every once in a while, somebody just off the cuff says, oh my gosh, you could write a book with all these stories that I'm sure you have from, you know, just crazy salon whatevers, which is completely true. So it was kind of like this, I don't know, kind of seedy, like behind the scenes, like what the stylist doesn't tell you kind of stuff. And I couldn't use real names. And I'm in mid-Michigan, so like celebrities are going to be like local TV personalities and MSU alumni.
Yeah.
And I can't even use their real names. So how much of a tell-all is that? And it was just very like, who am I writing this for? So I kept pivoting and pivoting until I kind of found my voice and kind of found the story I wanted to tell. So within my book, I have different things that have happened to me in the bridal industry, because with each pivot, I got more and more specific about my target audience. And I have had so many hairstylists that I've worked with over the years say, hey, can we have coffee? I'm really look up to you. And I know that you do this or that with your industry or within our industry. And, you know, you have a website or you do this on social media. And I'm just kind of wanting to learn from you. And the more and more that was happening, I'm like, you know, one-on-one is great and all, and a free cup of coffee is awesome, but but I should really write this down and share it with more people. And, you know, it parlayed into this very specific Hairpins and Happiness book. So
I love that though, because, you know, we've all kind of, I feel like, get to a point where people are like, I like what you have and I like what you do. I want to pick your brain kind of thing.
And I love that. Because you learn from them as well.
But at a point, it's like, how many free, like you said, how many free cups of coffee can I do kind of thing? Or it's like, okay. And I love that you are, you know, taking the chance on yourself to be like, okay, I have something that is valuable and is worth sharing with a wider audience. Because I think what holds so many people back from going for things like that is that imposter syndrome or the fear of rejection or, you know, of the like, well, what if this fails? And I love that you are like, you know what? I'm just going to go for it because I want to do this and I want to share this with as many people as I can. And I love that.
Absolutely. And the imposter syndrome thing, I think anybody just starting out with any of this stuff would, whether it's a podcast or a book or just posting your beautiful pictures on Instagram and Facebook and stuff. I think if you didn't say you had a little bit of like, oh, what if it's not well received? That whole imposter syndrome thing it's very real. And you just have to keep going. Just cross your fingers
exactly.
And make, you know. Yeah.
Exactly. Nobody comes right out the gate and like succeeds and blows things
out
of the water. Everybody has to stumble and fall at some point. You didn't nail your first haircut or your first updo or the first time you put false lashes on somebody. They were probably pretty wonky looking, you know, like, you know, the more you do things, the more comfortable you get in it. And it doesn't mean that you're not good just because you didn't do it perfect to begin with. So anybody who's out there and is like, I have something else that I want to share and that I want to say, I encourage them. I encourage you
absolutely
to get out there and
do
it. Yeah, because they might feel like nobody's listening. And at first, nobody might be listening. But after a while, you know, it'll pick up more momentum and it will grow. My downloads on the podcast, the first episode, were not super fantastic. You know,
of course not.
Yeah. It's been three seasons now. And then I look back and I see like episode number one is, you know, one of my most downloaded ones. And yeah, it's been out for the longest, but you know, it every day there are new people who are finding the podcast and coming in and going back and listening and binging through, you know, all 70 something, 80 something episodes. And it's like, okay, you know, it wasn't perfect when I started, but every time I turn on this camera and put this microphone in front of me and have something to say, you know, it's still important whether 5 people listen to it the first week that it's out or 1,000 people, the message is still the same.
Absolutely. And when you're saying something that is your truth or the truth, mm-hmm. people will tune in eventually and they're going to listen and they're going to hear you and they're going to continue following and go back and see your older work on Instagram and keep scrolling through or mm-hmm. listen to your older podcast episodes or buy the first book because they liked the second book or whatever the thing is. And it's important to just get your truth out there and share your knowledge because we all have such different backgrounds. You know, my cos school used Redken hair color. I haven't used Redken in years, but I still have that base knowledge and I built from that. And that's where I started and everything always grows from that. So just because I don't use Redken color currently doesn't mean I don't still have that wisdom and that knowledge under my belt. And I still use it, even though now I use Goldwell hair color. It's still part of who I am as a stylist and part of like my base knowledge. So I think we're always growing and changing and learning.
Yeah.
It's important.
Absolutely. And that's why Absolutely. I always try and like find different people from, you know, different walks of this industry and all these different opportunities and try and bring them onto the podcast. And when I heard about your book, I was like, oh, yes, I want to interview her. I want to showcase to people, you know, the potential. What are the opportunities? Because it's not always just, you know, working behind the chair doing cuts and color. You know, when you graduate cosmetology school, there's literally an entire world of opportunity out there. And I think a lot of people kind of pigeonhole themselves where they're like, well, this is what I learned. And this is what I have ahead of me. And I'll go and I'll do this for the next 30 years until my body falls apart and my knees don't work and my shoulders don't work. And I, you know, my feet don't work and whatever. And then yeah. there's like, and then I'm going to retire, you know, and it's yeah. like, there's so many opportunities and you can pivot at any point and just be like, you know what? I want to go in a new direction. This is a new passion that I have discovered and I want to explore that.
I completely agree. And again, that's kind of where my book came into play too, was now that I have been doing hair for 20 years, it's like, well, I'm probably not physically going to be able to do hair for an additional 20 years. And if I do, I'll be slowing down a little bit and not working 12-hour days behind the chair and that kind of thing. So, and not doing 20 weddings a year, probably less. So I want to share my knowledge and I want to continue because I love our industry and we always are changing and, you know, different trends change and you can't get bored in this industry. If you love what you do and you continue learning and you continue growing, there's no way to be bored. Like how can you be when there's so many options? If you're, you know, kind of getting bored with cutting and stuff, then, you know, start focusing on color or start focusing on bridal work or start focusing on doing a podcast and kind of seeing other avenues and stuff. So yeah, writing was one of those outlets for me creatively.
That's awesome. So talk to us a little bit about the process. How did the book actually come about?
I had been writing and deleting and writing and deleting chapters for years. And I finally kind of got a kick in the pants. I was actually listening to an author for authors podcast, Matt Rudd. Everybody just calls him Rudd. He said, just get the words on the page. I'm like, yeah, what in the hell is my problem? Like, get your shit together. So you have plenty to say, make it happen. So I had a goal of finishing it and getting it out in the world and published by the end of summer of 23. I missed that mark and it was published at the very beginning of October of 23, but we got there.
Okay. It's still in 2023.
Yeah. After 10 years, what's 2 months? It's fine.
Exactly.
So, a good friend of mine, Sarah Hendrickson is, it has a wicked sense of humor. She actually teaches at MSU. She teaches improv and comedy classes, acting classes, and she does a lot of editing within her job and so on and so forth. And she and her husband actually own a wedding planning company. They also do a lot of the, it's called EYP Weddings. So they're in the wedding industry. They do a lot of the music and talent for weddings as well as the planning. She just seemed like the perfect option to help me edit because one, she knows my sarcasm. So she's not going to like edit me down to the point of not sounding like me anymore. I didn't want to have an editor that was just, you know, some rando that I found online. She polished me up. She did have to keep me PC in a few areas. And I love her for that. But
I feel like that would be my biggest problem. I'd be like,
Yeah. Oh, there was a couple times she's like, you can't say that. I was like, but that's what I mean. But that's what I want to say. She's like, you can't say that. Like, damn it.
Would you like to get this published?
Mm. Yeah. Not if that's going out in the public realm. So I had her panache put on there and, but it still sounds like me and I absolutely love her for that. And every time I got Sarah to giggle, I was like, feather in my cap.
Yeah.
I did a thing. So, you know, they're fun stories that have actually happened to me, but you're going to learn along the way. I definitely made sure to leave some room in the back of the book for like note taking and stuff, because there is some homework. There's questions at the end of every chapter. I want you to enjoy the read. It's not a textbook, but I do want you to learn from it and, you know, tackle your goals and thrive in your industry and be the entrepreneur that I know you can be, because I think that's something that's overlooked in our industry. When you go to cos school, they talk about business, but really when you're a hairstylist, whether you're a W-2 commission employee or a chair rental or a booth rental or a salon owner, you own your business because you're selling yourself and you're selling your work. And I think that's really kind of yada yada over in school a lot. So yeah, I think that anybody in the beauty industry is going to get something from this book, even though it's specifically for bridal stylists. I wanted to speak to hairstylists as a whole.
In cosmetology school, they definitely didn't talk about anything whatsoever when it came to business, at least where I went to. I went to a Paul Mitchell school, and it was like, here's all the Paul Mitchell product. It was a lot of in-depth product knowledge on their product line, which is amazing. I love their stuff. Still use it a lot, you know, but it was like, here's our products, our product line, our terminology, our methods, and here's how to do everything to pass, you know, the Virginia Cosmetology licensing exam. And that was it. There was almost nothing outside of that. They did have some really cool opportunities where there was a podcast or audio lessons for students for all of their schools. And they interviewed a lot of different people in the industry and stuff like that. And it was really cool to like listen to those and learn a little bit about different career opportunities. But beyond that, there was no exposure to anything outside of here's how to pass your state boards and here's how to use all of the Paul Mitchell product lines, which I mean, I get they're a Paul Mitchell school. They're not going to be like, so we're going to teach you a little bit about Redken. We're going to teach you about the European color system. It's like, no, we use the American color system. And that is how our stuff is formulated. So when I had to like go out on my own, I knew I wasn't ever going to work for somebody else. I had a salon studio built in my house before I ever even went to cosmetology school.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, when I graduate, I'm going to hit the ground running and start taking my own clients. I was like, so I don't want to use Paul Mitchell color. I want to use something else. And so I had to like go through and find different lines and try all these different things and then be like, okay, this is what I like. This is what I want to use. Now I need to do like some really in-depth training with those color lines and those product lines and all that kind of stuff and try and build my own sense of who I was as a stylist and what I wanted to focus on and stuff like that. So it's definitely a journey when you graduate cosmetology school, like you know the basics, and then it's up to everybody else what they want to do with that. What additional training do they need to succeed in the area that they want to be successful in? Like with bridal hair, I try and explain to clients and people all the time where I'm like, just because somebody works in a salon does not mean that they know how to do bridal hair. There are some amazing bridal hairstylists who work in salons. Because they've decided, I want to learn this extra skill and I want to do it really well. And they've invested the time and the money and the energy and becoming amazing at doing bridal hair. But just because they have a cosmetology license does not mean that they know how to even tease hair correctly.
No, absolutely not. And there's such a wide realm within that, right? So, you know, just because you own a license or possess a license doesn't mean that you're a master of anything. In cosmetology school, they give you these little, you know, snippets. These, you need to be well-rounded and you need to pass the board. Their main objective is to get you to pass the board. They're not doing anything wrong, but it's up to us as stylists to continue our education and continue to evolve because trends change. When I went to cos school an eon ago, balayage and you know, the dirty root or the shadow root, that meant that you sucked at highlights. That did not mean, that was not something somebody came in and asked for. That means you didn't get that bleach up to the root and they wanted a redo. They were mad. So now that's something that people actually covet and want to see. They want a lived in dirty blonde, or they want something that has a little bit of a shadow or some, you know, some depth to it. And that just was not taught back when I was in school. Doesn't make it wrong. It wasn't a thing. So we have to continue to evolve and learn and grow as artists and as hairstylists and as business owners.
Trends definitely are continually changing, and especially in bridal. Like when I first started, I remember that everything was like volume, 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 volume. Everybody wanted so much more volume, and they all wanted it like right here. They wanted to look straight ahead in the mirror and they wanted to see all this volume right here. And they wanted it smooth or swooped back on the sides, but not covering the ears. And then it like became like the volume got lower and lower. And then everybody wants their ears covered. And it's like, okay, now I have to like shift all of my positioning. And when I'm planning out an updo, like, okay, where am I putting the volume now? And now I'm putting more of the volume towards the back and all of this texture now, whereas before it was not really so much texture. And now I have to learn the swoop. And how do I make the swoop strong without like, or secure without it drooping too much and without it falling out, but without being too severe. And it's like every few years, things are slowly shifting. And now we have like the Hailey Bieber bun, and like everything is much more slick back. And it's this small little knot at the back of the nape of the neck. And it's like, that's 100 miles different from anything that I've seen in the last several years. That was like the antithesis of what people wanted when I first started doing bridal hair. And now it's like, this is what people want. And, you know, we went from side parts and the swoop across the forehead, and now everything's center parts and sleek back. It continually changes. And so just because, you know, you get really good at one thing, it might not necessarily be what people are asking for. And you kind of really have to stay up on like, what's in, and whether or not it's like your style. I always tell people, like, figure out your style. You don't have to be the jack of all trades. If, you know, glam waves is not your thing, you don't have to stress so much about learning and perfecting your glam waves. If your clientele and your style is like big boho flowy updos and mermaid braids, just focus on that, get really good at that. But understand that, like, as things shift and those may not be what's in style and what's trendy anymore, to like at least just be aware and kind of train yourself and be like, okay, here's what's more in now. I need to at least have a basic knowledge. And you might discover like, oh, I actually really like the Hailey Bieber bun. I actually really like this look. And you can shift what your thing is.
When I first started out, everybody wanted the crown of curls, like the barrel curls, and it was all tight back, big crown, like the very
That's
Audrey
kind
Hepburn.
Of coming back. But
yes,
not
with
tight.
The twist. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. They want, you know, yeah, the French twist, but like the high buns are totally coming back, but they've got a lot of soft volume and they've got a lot of texture. They're more modernized. They're not like the sleek back 90s high buns.
Right. Yes. But everything, and again, everything's cyclical. Everything comes back around. You know, we saw such high updos, and like the tiara was always right in the front, right?
Oh, that's what I did for my wedding. That was literally how I did my hair for my wedding, was the high bun and a tiara.
I bet I can guess what year you got married. But
2005.
Me too, baby. Me too.
Yep.
So I had the high, yep, I had a high updo too. So, and then it got really, really low and really, really, and then we did the side and then it came back into the center. Yeah. And then, you know, now we were seeing a lot of half updos again. And then that turned into mermaid braids instead of the half up. And I mean, everything just kind of evolves and you have to kind of make it your own. And like you said, be aware of trends, stick to, you know, being true to your artistry and everything. But if you do your marketing funnel correctly and everything, you are going to attract the brides that are attracted to your work. You know, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah. You know, like if you want to do more mermaid braids, then post more mermaid braids. People are going to see,
for sure,
this is what she's doing all of the time. Then this is what she's really good at. And they're going to be like,
absolutely,
this is her style and I want her style. They're not going to necessarily come to you and be like, oh, I love you and I want to hire you to do a Hailey Bieber bun, when there's like nothing on your page like that. If you're getting those,
exactly,
kinds of things, it's a sign that like something is really off, you know, like the wrong people are finding you instead of being
agree.
Like, I really like what you create. That's a sign that things are working properly. And you're focusing on the right metrics in your funnel versus just being like, I want to be really super internet famous and I want all of these people to be inspiring.
I'm just going to post the things that everybody else is doing. No.
Exactly.
So
many people,
baby,
I think, follow the trends. You know, they're like, this is what's really trendy. So I'm going to post a lot of this now because I want to see the same success as the person who's posting those same styles or posting that same type of reel or whatever. And they just keep jumping on all of these trends. And then they're like, why is this not working for me? Why am I not seeing the same success?
Because you're all over the place.
So or whatever. And it's like, because you have like nothing narrowed in. You're just following trends and you're just copying things rather than being like, no, this is what I really like. This is the trend that speaks to me, that I'm like, yes, I want to do this. And I want to, you know, I want to be known for this. This is my jam. And it just happens to be like really popular right now. It's like, awesome, do that. You find something, like go all in on
it. The stars have aligned. My thing is popular. It's exciting.
Yep. Yeah. And there's always going to be people who want your thing, whether or not it's popular. There are definitely some people who are slightly behind the trends who are like, no, I still like the mermaid braid, even though the mermaid braid's not like the hot thing. That's fine. There aren't always going to be brides who are chasing the trends either. There are going to be people who are like, no, this is my style. This is what I like.
Yeah.
What I think and feel is beautiful. So that's what I want.
Yeah. This is how I'm the most secure with myself. And this is how I feel the most beautiful. So trends be damned.
I like that. Mic drop. If you could go back in your career and do anything differently, would you?
That's a loaded question. I learned so much every step of the way. I was definitely a W-2 commission stylist for a very long time. I am loyal like a golden retriever, and I would have never left. But unfortunately, that salon closed, and I was forced into booth rental. And I was horrified, and I've never been so stressed out in my life as like picking up my whole clientele and just moving across town and like, okay, you buy your own products now. And I'm like, what is happening? And it was the best thing ever. I mean, I think if I would have started booth rental too soon in my career, I'll do it later. I'm too lackadaisical about things, and I wouldn't have been as structured in my business. So I'm very thankful for my many, many years as a commission stylist. I absolutely love the freedom that I have now. If I want vacation, I take vacation, and I make sure that it makes sense within my business. And I make sure to work harder before and after those vacations. I wish I would have had the opportunity to go chair rent or booth rent sooner, but I don't foresee how that would have happened for me because, again, I'm very, very loyal, and I would have never left my other salon. I absolutely loved the owner and I love the people I worked with. I don't think I could have done it sooner.
And I really like the way that you kind of started that out with your, or like, you know, I've learned something from everything that I've gone through.
Absolutely.
And I think that is a sign of, you know, a healthy business owner and a healthy business mindset where you're like, hey, things might not have gone according to plan because nothing in life is ever going to go according to plan, personal or business. You know, you have the best of intentions and you try your best and you can plan, but you can't plan for everything. And there's going to be times where something kind of comes at you from the side and you're like, oh, didn't see that coming. How am I going to shift? How am I going to pivot?
How do I pivot?
Yeah, but you still learn something from it rather than reacting and responding emotionally and being like, oh, that wasn't fair or whatever. You know, you're like, okay, that really sucked, but what did I learn from it? How can I learn from it? I see a lot of newer artists who get caught up in the blame game of like, you know, this client did this and this bad thing happened. And it's like, cool. So what did we learn from it?
Right. And what can we do differently?
Yeah. Exactly. What are we going to do differently next time so that that doesn't happen again? Can you prevent everything? No. But you can definitely at least learn from a situation and be like, do I need a different boundary in place? Do I need a different clause to my contract? Do I need to adjust my timeframes for when I communicate different things or whatever? There's always some small piece to learn. And sometimes it might just be like, hey, that was a red flag I didn't see. And it's like, there is really nothing you could quote unquote do, but at least you know, like, okay, if things are taking a turn in this direction again, at least I have the knowledge to see it coming at me a little bit sooner and to be able to pivot away from it next time rather than just being like, oh, this wasn't my fault. Like, okay, it doesn't have to be your fault to learn something.
Absolutely. You don't want to blame shift and just be in the like this perpetual state of survival mode. That's no way to live. That's no way to run a business. So learning from mistakes and learning, it might not even be your mistake. We had tech trouble this morning. So
yeah, if I hadn't gone through that tech issue myself earlier, I wouldn't have been like, oh, wait, that's right. Go ahead and check this. This might be why the camera and the microphone aren't connecting, because you have to change this little setting inside of Chrome. Nobody made a mistake on anything, but I had a similar experience where I was like, oh, cool. I've learned from this and now I can use this in another situation.
Absolutely. And I'm so grateful.
Yeah. And you can learn from other people's mistakes too, or other people's experiences. I think I learned more about having a good and healthy marriage from all the fucked up ones that I was around growing up. I lived in many houses with bad marriages and relationships. And I was like, so note to self, don't say that.
Yeah,
don't
no,
do that.
That doesn't
That's
go well.
Not a healthy response to this situation.
No.
You know, and it's like, okay,
absolutely.
I was able to observe and learn and be like, all right, I don't want to get to that point and things like that. So
exactly. And then, I mean, just to go back to like the salon stuff. So going from a W-2 employee, where, you know, I'm told when I'm allowed to take vacation time and I'm told how much to charge for that wedding. And I'm, you know, I'm just like a robot, right? I don't make decisions for myself, being thrown into a chair rent situation and having more freedom. And then that salon, the owners changed their entire business model and closed that location. Immediately it reopened suite rentals. So now I have my own space and I love it. But without that middle and learning from that situation and those relationships within the salon and so on, I wouldn't have been ready for my suite. And I am, and I absolutely am thriving and absolutely love it. But again, without all of those stair steps and seeing all of those other things and seeing how other businesses were being run and how I don't want to run my business, just like you saw bad marriages and didn't want to have a bad marriage, you have to have those experiences to be better.
Absolutely. I had to fuck up a lot of hair before I got good at it. I had a lot of hot roots before I learned how to formulate properly. In the process of writing the book, was there ever a moment where you were like, this isn't going to happen? I don't think that I'm going to accomplish this goal. Or were you always like, this is going to happen, it just might take longer than I was hoping?
I would say the second option. I always knew, yeah, I'm pretty stubborn.
So where do you see yourself going with your career now? Now that you have this book under your belt, do you see yourself continuing to write more books, or do you see yourself continuing to share your knowledge in other formats for education or becoming, you know, a public speaker at events and stuff like that? Or do you feel like this was something you wanted to kind of check off your list and you loved it and that's really kind of it?
I already have notes and ideas for future chapters and books and stuff. So hopefully it doesn't take another 10 years.
Don't George R. R. Martin it.
Yeah. No, I definitely foresee more writing in my future because I really loved it and I had a lot of fun creatively. And, you know, I got all kinds of girl time with my editor, Sarah. So there's always that to look forward to. But the publication of my book has definitely brought opportunities like your podcast, and other podcasters have reached out to me to come and talk with them as well. The owner of my current salon suite, who I pay my rent to every week, she also owns a couple of cosmetology schools. So she's already been having me teach updo classes and stuff for a few years now, which is, again, one of the things that really motivated me to make it more of a niche book specifically toward the bridal industry, because they had some amazing questions and I was really enjoying the back and forth with her students. So a couple of different cosmetology schools have reached out to me about coming and doing a class or a book signing or whatever. And this has opened a lot of doors and I can't wait to see what else happens because of it. But it's not a one and done. I know I'm going to continue writing and talking and teaching. And it is creatively fulfilling to do that as well as doing the actual work behind the chair and in weddings. So
that's awesome. That's like how I feel about the podcast. It was a whim. I was like, oh, this would be fun. And now, like, the more that I do it, the more that I love it, the more passionate I get about it, the more I'm like, oh, I really like this. And it's opened up different opportunities and things like that. And I'm like, okay, this was a cool pivot, an unexpected pivot, but it's been a really fun experience for me. I would love to like start speaking on stages somewhere or something and just, hey, I want to come and give presentations or something and talk to other cosmetology schools or at hair shows. You know, I want to be one of those people who has like a room full of people and it's like standing room only and they want to hear what I have to say. Like that's
the dream.
Like, yeah. I'm like, oh, that would be amazing. I want to be Gino Stampora. I want to be
Sam Bia.
Hair show. Yeah, Sam Bia. You know, I want to have my, you know, little spot on the program and my headshot up there and then just, you know, get up on the little stage, my little Britney Spears microphone kind of thing and have the room of people being like, they want to hear what I have to say.
That's actually how I got my start in the hair industry. I actually started out as out of high school. I was like, well, I'm going to make something of myself. I have to go to college because only losers don't go to college. And
that was the lie that they fed us.
I know. In the late 90s and early 2000s, that's what they made us believe.
Yeah, so they were like, you're going to live on a street corner and sell weed if you don't have a college degree. And it was like, okay,
absolutely. That was the truth that was being, you know, preached at the time. So I went to our little local community college and hated it. It was awful. I pulled good grades. I did great, especially in some of the interior design classes I was taking. Math was the devil. And I hated it. I hated everything about it. I have to come back on Wednesday. This is horseshit. I don't want to do this. This is not for me. And I was cast as a model for a hair show, which doesn't mean I'm a model. It means I have good hair. And it was long enough to work with. So I was backstage and just the energy, all of these hairstylists were so into what they were doing. And I mean, it was gibberish to me because I didn't know hair language, right? I didn't know what they were talking about. And they're like, oh, we're going to throw a, you know, 9NBR on you. And then we're going to blah, blah, blah. I didn't know what the hell it was saying. It was all code. I didn't know what was going on. And, I came out with like a crazy mullet, which is of course talked about in my book, and loved it. Not my mullet, but the experience. And I enrolled in cos school like a week later. So our hair shows are like my absolute jam. They always recharge my creative battery. I love the energy and just seeing everybody, even just the students, everybody walking around, not cos students, like all of us as students sitting there, we're all like eager to learn. And you can tell the ones that were drugged by their coworkers. And you're like,
yeah,
I've already been in this class. I already know everything. And you're like, oh, listen, Linda, you don't know. You just sit down and there's going to be new verbiage. There's going to be a new trend. There's going to be a new whatever. And you're going to walk out feeling so good about the time that you just spent on this class. Just open your mind.
You never know what that one little trick. That's what I say about education all the time. I am always willing to go and sit and listen to anybody who is out there sharing their knowledge about anything because I never know what little piece I'm going to take away, and it might be 3 years down the road, but I might be like, oh yeah, that's right. I remember hearing somebody say, if I run into this situation, to do this and it'll do whatever, you know, it's like,
I've even thought like, oh, that's not a good look. And my takeaway from that class was, I will never use that verbiage because it sounds harsh, or it sounds like, oh God, a muddy root. What? Diane doesn't want muddy roots. She's like, she wants a shadowed root. Sounds like a little more feminine and soft. Like you say mud and she's going to be like, yeah. Or whatever the thing, you know, that's just what popped in my head. But yeah, sometimes it's what you don't want to do that you learned. And that's great too.
I love hair shows. And I was always a makeup artist first. And I did makeup for years and I would go to makeup shows. And then my old business partner was a hairstylist because I was like, I don't do hair. I need to team up with somebody who does hair. And we're going to build this bridal team. And we had these big plans and whatever. And she started taking me to the International Beauty Show up in New York City because she had grown up around there and she had been going there for years. And she was just like, I'll get you a ticket and you come with me and we'll just go. And experiencing it for the first time, just amazing. And now this was like 12 years ago when IBS was like huge. COVID killed the shit out of that show. Well, yeah, the last couple of years, I'm like, this is not what it used to be like. I swear to God. Like, I started bringing my best friend and I'm like, I'm going to show you what it's like. And she's like, really? This is what you've been talking about for years? And I'm like, it wasn't this way. It was so much better. It was so much bigger. It was so much nicer. Like, there was so much more and so much more energy. And that was one of the things that really started to introduce me to hair and being like, there's a lot here to learn. It's different. It wasn't like with makeup shows where it was so much of like, here's these products and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of that at hair shows, but it's...
The energy is just different.
The energy is. It's so different. And I was like, I want to be a part of this world. I love this.
Yes. And that's exactly what it was for me. And that's why I became a cosmetologist in the first place. I was because I saw it from the backstage end and it was like, these people, like, this is the coolest job ever. They just get to come and play with hair all day. This is awesome. And they do whatever they want. I mean, theoretically, but yeah.
I don't know. Some of them do some crazy shit.
Some of them do.
And it's like,
you sign the little waiver and they clip or cut your hair and do whatever craziness, or you leave with a mullet.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one hair show. It was the Midwest Beauty Show in Chicago. And there was a guy on stilts and he had like, you know, 48 inches of mohawk and like just crazy. It was craziness. It was just chaos. There's shit hanging from the ceiling and like techno music and rock and roll music and Nick Arojo's over there razor cutting. And I mean, it was just amazing. And then there's also these very intimate little rooms that you could kind of tuck in and get a more business one-on-one kind of thing. And there was just so much going on and so much energy and so much pride in our industry. And everybody was dressed to impress. And it was such a cool vibe. And I hope we get back to that.
I hope so too. I'm not going to IBS this year because I just had a terrible experience last year. And I was just like, so I'm not going to go into New York City in March again. And it's really cold. And I didn't love that. Instead, I'm making my best friend go to Premiere in Orlando. So I'm like, let's go somewhere where it's going to be like warm and we can go to Universal Studios because we have season passes. And even though we both live in Virginia, we're like, we're getting season passes because we're going to Orlando 3 times next year. We're going to go in June and then we're going to stay at a nice hotel the rest of the time. And we're going to like lay out by the pool and just have a nice experience. And if the fire alarm goes off at our hotel at 3 o'clock in the morning, at least we'll be outside where it's warm. And not in the freezing cold like New York. But hair shows are fun. They're like, it's like going to a club sometimes. Like with the big stage shows, it's like, you know, it's like all this like flashing lights and all this music going on. And you're like, what is going on right now? He's lifting her hair up with a balloon and then he's going in with some clippers. That's not going to be very even ends. But we're all like, yeah, do it. It's awesome. Yeah. You're amazing.
It's so true.
You're an innovator. And we're all like so into it. And then we walk out of there. We're like, I am never going to do that to somebody.
No, never, ever will I ever. But I'm so glad I saw someone else do it.
That was really fun.
I'm never going to do it. But by golly, I'm going to tell everybody about it.
Exactly. It is a moment that is seared into my brain for forever.
There was a Paul Mitchell show that I went to, and they were using a staple gun and stapling artificial flowers into updos. They were hair up into a high, messy ponytail, back combing it, and then just like, and they were like 5 minute updo. And I was like,
no.
I mean,
no, we won't be doing
I see the innovation here. However, I don't know how bridal that can be. So
there are moments where I watch some of the updo class. I'm like, I know where you're going with this. But no.
Yeah. Yeah. New York Fashion Week, I might be able to get away with some of this shit, but.
I've done hair for Bridal Fashion Week in New York before. And I remember doing this like beautiful ballerina bun. And the hairstylist that was the key artist for the show was like, it's beautiful. Now mess it up. And I was like, but what? Do what to it now? And she was like, yeah, the whole theme is like, she went home from the party and slept in it and is like walking around on the streets of New York the day after. And I was like, but that's ugly, but that's crazy. So I like took the model's hair and I like rubbed my hands over it to like make some flyaways and like pieced some things out. And I was like this. And she was like, it's still too beautiful. And I was like, all right, fine. You know, it was not the experience of working in a fashion show that I had always imagined. I was like, no, maybe I just need to like get on the team to go do like Victoria's Secret. Like I'll just do those beautiful bouncy like French blowouts and French roller sets and the beachy waves. Like I'll just fucking do that then. If I don't have any creative freedom and I can't make something actually look good, then whatever. I'll just do boring pretty. I knew the fashion world was not for me either when there was like graphic eyeliners and all these other things. And I'm like, but I don't like that. I'm not an avant-garde artist. Like I like doing soft, pretty makeup. And that's when I fell into bridal. And I was just like, I want to make somebody look in the mirror and be like, oh my God, it looks like me, but I look really pretty and I look really beautiful. And I'm like, cool. The people that do the graphic liner and the avant-garde and these like intense things, I'm like, that is so beautiful. I love the art side of it. It's not my thing.
I completely agree. And I love doing bridal work because you are making people look like the best version of themselves. And they look in the mirror and they're like, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. I feel so pretty. I'm going to get married. Like they're just so grateful. And yeah, the avant-garde stuff is so fun to watch and it's fun to be a part of. It's not my jam.
I'm just not a avant-garde kind of, like, I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. I love looking at it.
The skill that it takes, it's like, oh, I can absolutely just, I can respect the shit out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very cool.
Do it.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'll do the boring corporate headshots where you put a little bit of brow filler and they're like, oh. That's not what my eyebrows look like. I'm like, well, it's for headshots, honey. So we need to make them actually look like they're there on your face. And in a photo, it's not going to look the same. And they're paying me day rates. And that's a lot of money. I will compromise some of my artistic morals for the right amount of money.
The bread and butter bookings, you have to kind of like, okay, if that's what you want.
Yeah. Why are you paying me this much money? If that's all.
Yeah. To put mascara and powder on you. All right. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's like men's grooming. I love men's grooming jobs. Like when I get hired for corporate headshots or catalog work or anything like that. And I'm like, it's a dude. Sweet. Like that's going to take me like 8 minutes. And I'm always got to be like, I'm not putting any makeup on you. It's skincare. We're just going to put some moisturizer on you and that's it. Like, this is just some anti-shine. And they're like, oh, okay. And I'm like, concealer and bronzer, and, you know, like just enough. So it's like, all right, we want to cover up all of those crazy broken capillaries and then like make you not look washed out. But it's not makeup. It's not.
No, this is dude stuff. Yeah, it's really burly. It's very masculine.
Yeah. It smells like bergamot.
Exactly. That makes it for men.
Like all dude smells start with bergamot. They're like bergamot oil. some reason that's masculine. So let's just make everything with bergamot oil.
You're so right. It's so true.
Well, if people are interested in getting their hands on your book and reading and learning more about your experiences and all of your amazing knowledge that you have to share, where can they find your book? Where can they get it?
Well, it's available on Amazon. It's in both ebook and paperback forms. Amazon.com. Just look up Hairpins and Happiness.
There's going to be a direct link in today's show notes as well. So you don't even have to search it. You can just click on the link and they can get it right there.
Yep. And then my website is hairpinsandhappiness.com. So you can find more out there.
And on Instagram, you're there as Hairpins and Happiness as well, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. So people can connect with you in a bunch of different ways, and it's all the same name. They only have to remember one thing. I love it.
That's right. I made it easy peasy.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. And thank you everyone for tuning in. Make sure you go to Amazon and get your copy of the book and help support this amazing hairstylist and your local beauty community. I'm sure she would absolutely love it. And I will see you guys back next week.